Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay. It's only films to be buried with.
Hello, and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a hand sanitizing wipe, and I love film. As Albert Einstein once said, life is like riding a bicycle. To keep your balance, you must keep moving. Which is why I like to see all of my films in 4DX, getting jolted around and spilling my Sprite and popcorn and all that shit. Surprising about that. I didn't know Albert Einstein was into that, but then I guess he did always like inventions. Every week, I invite a special guest over, I tell them they've died, then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Barry Jenkins, Kevin Smith, Doug Benson, Jamila Jamil, and even Zed Mambles. But this week, it's the brilliant comedian, actor, and writer, Zainab Johnson. Get over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you'll get an extra 20 minutes of chat with Zainab. We talk about beginnings, we talk about endings. She tells me a secret. You get the whole episode uncut and ad-free and as a video. Check it out over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. Ted Lasso season 2 is all finished. Available now on Apple TV Plus, so you can watch the whole show in one go. And Soulmate season 1 is on Amazon Prime, so you can watch that too. Why not watch them both? You know what I mean? You may as well. There's nothing else to do, is there? I mean, there is. Get on with your lives. You don't have to do any of this. Just, I'm grateful you're here. So, Zainab Johnson is an excellent comedian, writer, and actor who I saw at a gig that I had in Los Angeles, and she was so brilliant, and I was very excited to get her on this podcast. We recorded this on Zoom a few days ago, and it was such a joy. I think you're really going to like it. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 170 of Films to be Buried With. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is I, Brett Goldstein, and I'm joined today by an actor, a writer, a last comic standinger, a Netflixer, a uploader, a hero, a creator, a legend, and one of the finest stand-up comedians I have seen in LA. Please welcome to the show the wonderful, the brilliant, it's Zainab Johnson! This is huge. It is a delight to have you, an honor to have you, if anything. And we have not really met. We met very briefly at an outdoor gig where everyone was smoking weed, and I felt like I was getting high just standing there before going on stage. You went on stage, you were fucking brilliant, and I thought, yeah, I want to talk. I thought, do you know what? I want to talk. I want to hear more of this. So here's the thing. I looked you up.
Okay, good.
And aside from your incredible career, etc., the most shocking thing is you're one of 13 children.
How did I know that's what you were going to say?
Because I guess when anyone looks you up, that's surely the thing that they're like, what? And then I was like, well, of course she's a comedian. You're one of 30. Where do you fit in this mix?
I am fifth from the top.
So you're sixth.
So, no, I'm fifth.
Oh, you're fifth. Okay.
I'm fifth. There's four above me, eight below me.
Jesus Christ. How do you...
Same mother, same father.
I don't know where to start. I'm assuming... Who's your favorite?
I don't really have a favorite, but I think there have been a few favorites like over the time. Like, I love my youngest brother, but I think it's because he could have been my kid. you know, like,
I'm
like 16 years older than him. So I like him. I think it depends on the age. Like right now I'm really close to my sister who is 8 years younger than me, but like, it took me getting into my 30s and her getting into her 20s for us to get close, you know, for a very long time. She just seemed like a little, you know, just like, but I mean, we all have very different personalities.
13 different, I can't even invent 13 different personalities.
It's interesting to me because we come from the same two people. So for us to be so different is just, it's strange or rather interesting.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating.
But one, everybody in my family thinks they're funnier than me. That's one. and when I did like one of my first TV sets, one of my younger brothers was in the audience and he was like, I was so scared. He was like, it was the scaredest I've been my entire life. And I was like, why? He was like, because I don't remember you being funny. And I was like, and he was like, and then the first word you said and everybody laughed and I just relaxed. And then I listened to you and I was like, oh, she's really funny. He was like, but at first I don't remember you being funny when we were growing up. And I was like, probably because I was yelling at you.
Yeah. He just thought this was like a Make-A-Wish Foundation thing. Oh my God, you poor thing. I'm annoyed because I'm aware that you're one of 13. I assume it's something you talk about a lot. And I hate talking to just people about stuff they have to talk about all the time. But it is fascinating. Purely just in terms of the logistics of it. Like I have one sister who I'm very, very close with. I try and talk to her as much as I can. We talk maybe twice a week. How do you keep in contact with 13 people on the reg?
There's some that I talk to more often than others, but I think I definitely speak to my siblings like a good amount of time. Like I speak to a good five of them a few times a week, and it's not long conversations, but it's just like it'll be a text or a call, you know, like we talk. But you just made me realize something. I realized in my career, now my goal is to do something that is more fascinating than having 12 siblings.
But I've
never thought about it before.
Surely that's why you're a comedian though, right? It's, you're so desperate for attention. If you're fighting 12 other people for attention, you have to become a comedian. You have to have a TV show where you're a comedian on TV and go, see, now I'm the fucking favorite. Surely.
Oh my God, that's funny. That's the theme of the show.
Oh, is it?
It is. I do think that it's interesting that I chose something that is very independent. You know, like I could have joined a sketch group. I could have joined an improv group, but I think stand-up is a very like lonely road. And I do find it very interesting that that's what I chose.
Yeah, that is interesting. Yeah. That is interesting that you don't have an improv group called Family, My Family. Tell me this, you do your brothers and sisters, do you have different ones for different occasions? As in, do you go like, if I feel sad, I need to call this one. If I feel, you know, do they serve different purposes for you?
No, I am like the caretaker of all. Yeah. So I am usually the one that is called upon when things are needed, whatever. Like I can give everything. I can give advice. I can give sentiment. I can give money. I can give, you know, but I do call different ones for different information. I know the wealth of information each one of them has. I know what their expertise is. Right. So I call according to the expertise I need.
Fascinating. And how long have you been doing stand-up?
10 years.
Was that always your plan? Or something happen where you were like, I want to get into that?
So I went to school. I got a degree in math and education, and I thought I would teach. And then my friend, my really close friend at the time, decided she was moving to LA to be famous. And I was like, I can't let her move without me because of all the famous women I know, I don't know who their best friend is. You know, like who's Julia Roberts' best friend? Nobody knows.
Great question.
You know? And so I'm like, well, I got to go.
Does she have one?
Exactly. Who knows? We, you know, we may never know. The only best friend we know is Gail and Oprah. What?
It's really funny. It's just now I'm obsessed with finding out who Julia Roberts' best friend is.
We don't know. Like George Clooney? I mean, I don't know. Who is her best friend?
Could be. We don't know. You're right. We literally don't know. So hang on. So your famous friend is going and you're like, you need to be the first famous person other than Oprah where people know who their best friend is.
Well, yeah, I just thought, like, I can't let her be famous without me. That was my thought. That was the thing that motivated me to pack up my car in New York City, drive across country, and move to LA. I was like, I can't let her be famous without me.
What happened to your friend? Please tell me she's Julia Roberts.
I don't know, actually.
So she's not famous and she's no longer your best friend?
Yes, both of those things are true.
Wow. God. Is she now calling you up? Like, I want to be your best friend. I want to be the best friend of the famous person. How did she fuck this up so badly?
I don't know if she would ever call. No, it's not like that. It's not like that. It's just like a growing apart, you know? Mm-hmm. But I'm definitely more famous. Right now, you know, things can change in a heartbeat, but right now
you win.
Yeah, a lot of stuff comes up on Google.
Absolutely fascinating. And you are currently, you're currently making your own show or developing your own show or making your own show? You're somewhere in there.
Developing. Yeah, in the middle of it.
And this one's your baby. Are we allowed to talk about it at all?
No.
Okay, good. I'm glad I brought it up.
No. I feel like you gave it away. It's like you were like, you have 12 brothers and sisters and how do you know, and you're fighting to be the favorite. That's the show.
I would 100% watch that show. I would buy that show and I would watch that show.
I hope everyone else feels that same way.
Well, of course they do, because it's fucking mad to have that many brothers and sisters. I don't know how you cope. It's just mad. I want to see the show.
When I was younger, when I was little, all I ever wanted was to be the only child.
Yeah.
I wanted so bad to know what that was like, because it's like you don't have any privacy. And the thing about it is we were very poor, but not because my father didn't have a good job. It's just like you got to have like Bezos money to take care of 13 kids. You know, in New York City, we grew up in Manhattan. God. Like, it was...
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You were rich for a four-person family, but for a 13-person family, you need Bezos money.
Poverty.
Oh, Zainab. Oh, shit. I've forgotten to tell you something. Oh, nuts.
Uh-oh.
I should have told you this. I should have told you this at the beginning when we logged on. If anything, I should have told you. Oh, fuck. I should have emailed you. Oh, man. I'll just have to say it. I feel like a dunce. I'll just say it. You've died. You're dead.
Okay.
You took that well. You seem unfazed. how did you die?
I mean, I'm devastated.
Oh, you didn't want this.
It's just the tea. I mean, the tea is what relaxed me, but it was hard news to hear.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is probably going to sound so cheesy, but I died laying in my California king bed.
Mm-hmm. California king.
And I'm dressed in all white linen.
Okay.
And the sheets are all white linen. Everything, every single thing is all white. The sheets are like the most soft organic cotton. It's 1,000 thread count.
Mm-hmm.
My loving, loving husband is rubbing my feet as I take my last breaths. And I'm laying on my back. And I just kind of like float away. Like, I close my eyes like really, really softly and I fade away. And I think my mom, I think she'll live like way beyond me. Like, if I'm 90, my mom will be like 120.
Yeah.
And I think she'll call one last time to tell me to do something. Like,
well, like a chore.
Yeah, just to parent. Like, you know how parents have to overparent. Yeah. So she'll be like, you know, Zainab, make sure the temperature is right before you go. Some something.
She'll be like, make sure your all white linen ceiling is clean.
Make sure you have on clean underwear.
Okay, so a couple of questions.
Okay.
It sounds lovely. The visual's lovely. All white linen everywhere. I mean, everywhere. Okay, everywhere. Like ceiling.
Everywhere.
Floor to ceiling.
No, not floor to ceiling.
Okay.
That's so not like the everywhere. Room is not like veiled in linen. Okay. No.
Just all your stuff is.
Yeah, it's still my bedroom.
Okay. So it's your bedroom. You're 90. That's the age you've chosen to die.
I'm somewhere in between 90 and 100.
Okay. Well, I'm going to need specifics.
I'm 93.
Okay. Why 93?
Three is my number. I like threes.
Okay.
And so three can go into nine three times. And then I just put a three after the 90. So 93. That's what happened in my mind just now.
That's nice. That's really nice. I like that. That's made a very magic number. But my other question is, this husband rubbing your feet, is it currently your husband or is this a future husband?
He's my future husband.
Okay. Do you know him yet?
No.
Okay. What does he look like and what's his vibe?
What does he look like eventually, or what does he look like when he's 90 something as well?
Fair question. What did he look like when you met him?
Oh, he was tall and like thin, but still like muscular, but not too fit. Not like all he does is go to the gym, just like, you know, like he has a combination of like caring about himself, but not taking himself too seriously. Mm-hmm. He has a nice beard.
Is he dressed in a white linen?
No. He's probably dressed in like jeans and a hoodie, and it fits him well.
Nice.
And maybe like some simple but cool sneakers.
Okay. And what's his personality like? Or does that not matter?
He's like super smart and like a little bit corny. Like I'm totally the funny one.
Yeah.
But he appreciates that. And he goofs himself up a bit just to try and make me laugh.
Okay.
Like he gets super goofy just to make me laugh.
And he does make you laugh.
And it works.
Does make you laugh.
And he does. Oh, yeah. Good. Yeah.
And what does he do? What line of business is he in, if any?
Oh, no. He does business. I don't care. But whatever it is, I respect it.
But it's not the entertainment business.
He could be in the entertainment business, but I prefer him to be behind the camera, you know, like, so I wouldn't be mad if he was like a really talented like DP or like a lawyer or like, you know, a finance person. But like, is he a stand-up comedian? No.
No, he can't be a stand-up comedian. Not on my watch.
Yeah, no. And is he an actor?
Let's hope not. Let's hope not. You don't want that.
No.
You deserve. You deserve better. So this guy, what's his name?
What is his name?
You're gonna have to say it a lot, unless you know have a nickname for him, I suppose. So maybe
I don't know because I haven't met him yet. So I guess I have to.
Mm.
His name is, what's a name I would like?
Mm.
A name that I don't mind saying for 60 years.
Yeah.
Okay, if I went the simple route, maybe like Daniel.
Daniel, listen, the man you've described is a fucking Daniel, for sure. For sure you've described a Daniel. That is an absolute Daniel you described.
Or maybe it's a name that I don't know yet. You know, maybe it's a name that's not very common.
No, it's a Daniel.
No, maybe it's a name like Zainab.
We both know it's Daniel. Zainab and Daniel, it goes well together as well. Who's coming over tonight? Zainab and Daniel. Oh, great. She's really funny. He's a bit goofy, but I love him. I love the way he wears a hoodie and jeans. They really fit him. So this is all lovely. Your life with Daniel sounds great. What slightly concerns me is how you died. Daniel's rubbing your feet.
Yes.
Why did that kill you?
Okay. So it actually didn't kill me, right?
Right.
So I would really like to just die peacefully in my sleep. Like, I would like to just be laying down, mm-hmm. going to sleep. But I would also like to know the day so that I could have gotten everything done that I needed to get done. You know, yes. I don't want to go to sleep and it be my last sleep and I don't know it's my last sleep. I want to know that it's my last sleep so that I said all my goodbyes, that, you know, so that I mm-hmm. handled all the business that I need to handle. But what I know is the rubbing of feet is so therapeutic and it's so relaxing and it's a very small gesture, but it's a huge care for a person. I was in a hospital before and it didn't matter how many drugs they gave me, like in a hospital bed. It doesn't matter how many drugs they gave me. Nothing felt as comforting or as promising or as hopeful as when my mom rubbed my feet. And because I remember that, when one of my friends had her son, I went to the hospital that day and everybody bought gifts and food. And I sat there and rubbed her feet. Her son is like 10 years old now. And she always says, "Zainab, when you rubbed my feet, that was the thing that brought me the most comfort."
Zainab.
So my husband is not like killing me with comfort. He is just making my departure the most serene it could be because he loves me so much. I mean, he played Goofy for 60 years.
Yeah, that's Daniel for you. Man, that's beautiful. That's beautiful to rub in the feet in the hospital with a lady that's given birth. I think we should start a thing where we go do that. Just go around maternity wards rubbing people's feet. That's fucking great.
I think that they would love it. I think they would absolutely love it. We'd have to get permission.
Oh, I mean, if there's admin involved, it's really, really going off this. I think it's better if it's a surprise. Surprise feet
rub. There is nothing more uncomfortable than a surprise massage.
Yes.
From a stranger.
Yeah, thinking about it, it's a terrible idea not to at least call ahead.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, look, I have a thing on this podcast, which is when people say they die peacefully in their sleep, I usually sort of think, yeah, but you died of something happened while you were asleep, like, you know, you had a heart attack or something happened.
Okay.
But I've never done this before, but I am going to let you die peacefully in your sleep because I really, really liked it. Usually I make people who die peacefully in their sleep have a horrific death while they were sleeping. But yours is genuinely beautiful, and I really like Daniel, and I think it's lovely what he did for you.
Daniel.
Also,
it says a lot. Because, you know, normally the husbands can't survive without the wife.
That was Daniel. Daniel was strong.
But Daniel's going to be okay.
Daniel's going to outlive your mom and she's going to live to 150.
Well, you know what? I'm going to tell Daniel the moment I die, don't let her make you do anything else. The moment I die, your obligation is done.
You're free. Do you worry about death? Is it something you think about a lot?
I do. And it's like new, it's recent for me, but like it's like it causes like great anxiety. And I Googled it like maybe some months ago. And a lot of like the articles that I read said that when you start to have like a fear of death, it means that you really have work to get done. Like you feel like you're not getting done that's the anxiety. You really want to accomplish whatever it is for that person, whether it's like, you know, a job or like a relationship or being a parent or like whatever it is, like you, that's the thing that's making you fearful of death. Cause your worry is like, oh, what if I don't accomplish this idea before I go?
Yeah, interesting. So you've only recently felt this thing of, I've got fucking shit to do and I need to get it done.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I felt that. I mean, I feel like I've always felt that way, but maybe in the past like year and a half, maybe 2 years, and it's not the pandemic. I know anybody else would say like, oh, well, it's the pandemic, but no, it's unrelated to the pandemic. I have this like anxiety. I grew up with I haven't had many people die. Like only my dad died. That's the only, my father and my grandparents, but I haven't had to deal with much death. Even think about it, like 13 kids and we're all just like, you know, here just freaking living, you know? And so I always thought that like death was like a release, like death was like, so I'm Muslim. And so, you know, we always say from Allah, you come and to Allah, you return. And so it's always been something very natural to me. But lately I have been thinking about like the untimely death, not like, you know, it's like the untimely death is the one that is uncomfortable.
Yeah. The untimely thing. There's definitely, it's a phenomenon of people, particularly people who have near-death experiences or who nearly die, they then get a lot of stuff done. They seem to be like, because they know, oh, I lived, and so I really need to make the most of this.
Well, I feel like I had a near-death experience, but it was when I was very young. Yeah, I was 17. I got hit by a truck.
What the fuck? Hit by a truck. I've never heard hit by a truck. Hit by a truck is like a fucking cartoon. What the fuck happened? And that's awful.
And like a truck, not like a Range Rover, like a straight up truck, like a delivery, like a truck.
Oh my
truck.
God. Can you talk about
drunk driver.
Are you okay to talk about it?
Drunk driver. Mm-hmm. So I was pushing the back of a car, right? I'll keep this brief, but I was in Atlanta visiting a friend and like on like a winter break. I was in high school and we went to the mall, and then on our way home from the mall, we stopped at a gas station and she got gas. But it's like, I'm a New York City kid, so I don't know anything about cars. I don't know how to drive. Like, if I'm not even paying attention to streets. Like, I'm not, you know, I'm just so long for the ride, right? And so we get maybe like a block away from the gas station and the car just shuts down. It just turns off.
Right.
And I'm thinking like, well, I guess we just had gas. So why would it turn off? You know, later, you know, like what now, like 15 years later, I think about it and I'm like, maybe she put diesel in the car instead of, because, you know, that has like a really quick reaction. Yeah. That has like a really quick negative reaction.
That'll fuck it up quick. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. And I never knew. But she was, you know, it was me and two other girls, and the driver was like, let's just push it, because we can literally see the gas station we just left. So she's like, just push the car. And I remember I had on some brand new sneakers. So I was like, I do not want to push the car. Like, I don't want to mess up my sneaker. And I get out and I push the car, me and another friend, we push the car. And then I woke up in an ambulance.
Oh, really? Oh, that's it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I woke up in an ambulance. I woke up for a few moments in the ambulance and I could see like the blood and the EMT worker was cutting off my clothes.
Oh, shit.
And asking me like who the president was and who, you know, like, and fuck. Yeah. And then I woke up like sometime after that in like an ICU unit in the ICU room in the hospital. And that's it.
God.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And then I had to like rehabilitate, and that took a very long time, and I still have like the scars, you know, to show it, but it does make me feel like it does make me feel very purposeful. Cause I'm like, I could have died.
Yeah.
Like in so many different ways. I could have died from the hit. I could have died from the surgeries. I could have died from infection. I could have, you know, like I could, there's so many things, which is probably why I didn't choose like a terrible death. Cause I'm like, been there, done that.
You know what? And I fucking sensed it. That's why I'm giving you a nice one. You're the first person I've let die nice, because I sensed it. Wow. Can I ask you, and again, I don't want to sort of trigger anything. I don't want, you know, if this is too far, please tell me. But so you've never remembered the thing, like your memory of it is pushing the car and then you're in the ambulance and you have no.
Yeah, I don't remember the hit.
That's fascinating that your brain protects you from that. Or, you know, I have no idea. I'm guessing, but
yeah. I've been told, I mean, I've seen the police reports, but I was told that we were pushing the back of the car. The drunk driver slammed into us and pinned us in between the truck and the car.
Eesh.
And then, and then backed out away from us and then drove off. So it's like a drunk driver hit and run.
Fuck.
And this woman witnessed the whole thing. and she followed him as she called the cops on her cell phone.
Wow.
And the cops cut him off at an intersection. And
wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. So.
Wow. What do you think happens when you die? Do you have a theory on that? Did you see anything?
I used to have a theory, but the every day it's like changing for me because I used to think that you go to heaven, like yeah. You go to like paradise, to Jannah, you know, is what like how what you say in Arabic. I used to think that that's what all of this. That's why you try and be a good human being. You know, that's all like, you know, your points to get up there where they say everything is perfect and like dandy. But then one day, in an attempt to write a joke, I thought, wow, like I love my father and he did great. In my opinion, a great job while he was here. And I can't wait to see. This was a thought that day. I probably had a dream about him or something. And I'm like, oh man, at least when I get to heaven, I'll see my father again. Right. And then it hit me. I don't know if it's the comedian brain. It hit me like, what if he doesn't want to see you? What if his heaven does not involve 13 kids?
Yeah.
You know,
oh my God, like, yeah. He's like, fuck that. Yeah.
And then I started thinking about it. Like, we all have this idea that our heaven involves other people. But like, if like, can one of my ex-boyfriends be in my heaven? That's not heaven.
This is really interesting. You've really got to curate your heaven. You're right. You're absolutely right. Fuck.
Because they, you know, like religions make it seem like it's just this one big place that everybody that is good goes to. And then hell is this like one bad place. But I'm just like, I don't.
But you're right. Heaven with everyone is it in it isn't heaven.
Isn't heaven at all. That's like now. And it's awful. If everybody is in heaven, then that means there's a pandemic in heaven.
Oh my God, you're blowing my mind. Well, listen, I've got news. There is a heaven and it is curated. And I've gone through your friends list. I've gone through your close friends list on Instagram and only those lot are in. And your dad is there. He's happy to see you. Aww. Surprisingly. He's given me a list in order of favorites and you made the top three, so that's good. And everyone's very happy to see you. And there's all your favorite thing in heaven. What's your favorite thing?
This is going to be so cliche.
Say it.
Watching movies.
Oh, well then you fit right in. You fit right in. If that's your favorite thing in the world. This place is made of movies. It's like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, but instead of chocolate, it's movies. Just DVDs, just VHS tapes in a river, river of VHS tapes and Betamax trees and Laserdisc chairs. And you'll have a lovely time there.
And perfectly fried French fries.
Perfectly fried French fries. Guys, yes. I mean, no question they're perfectly fried.
Okay.
So when you get there, they give you a cone of perfectly fried French fries and everyone's excited to see you and they want to know about your life, but they want to know about your life through film. And the first thing they ask you is, what's the first film you remember seeing, Zainab Johnson?
I think the first film I remember seeing is A Land Before Time.
Lovely, lovely film. Land Before Time, Don Bluth, dinosaurs, happy, sad.
It was a cartoon about, it was like a feature length cartoon about dinosaurs. And this one dinosaur on a search to get back to his parents, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And he made friends along the way.
It's a beautiful film. Do you remember who you saw it? Did you see it at the cinema or on TV?
I don't know. But I did go to the movies a lot with my family. Like I remember specifically seeing Coming to America. And being like really, really young, like probably too young to even watch that movie. But my father used to really like going to matinees. Right. And so we would just all go to the matinees with him. I remember specifically seeing that in a movie theater. But Land Before Time, maybe I saw it at home.
That's a really good first one. That's lovely. What is the film that made you cry the most? Are you a crier, Zainab Johnson?
I used to not be a crier. I used to not be a crier. And yeah, not at all. And I used to pride myself on it. Like, I ain't crying 16 years. Like, I was that person. And like, if I did have to cry, I would be like, oh my God, like it would, I would be taken aback by the cry. But now, oh my God, the older I get, I just comes. And I can see a commercial, like, I mean, it could be a State Farm commercial. And I'm like, oh my God, please honor her claim. You know, like, it's ridiculous. The film that made me cry the most, probably, and it's a very specific scene in this film, Little Miss Sunshine.
I mean, I'm a huge fan of the film. What is the specific scene?
Oh my God. So the entire film, the brother is like preparing to go to the Air Force, right? Yeah. Then at some point when they're in the van, it's like you could tell this is his life's dream. Like this is his out, you know? And then at some point while they're in the van, they discover he's colorblind. Mm. And because he's colorblind, he'll never be able to go to the Air Force. And that was devastating.
Yeah.
That was devastating on so many different levels. I'm just like, and I mean, there's so many reasons to cry in that movie, but that one, I was just like, wow. I didn't even know you couldn't be colorblind and go to the airport. You know, like I didn't
know,
it was like
know
information.
That.
Yeah. And it was,
this is sad information.
Oh my God. I felt terrible.
Yeah. Interesting. It's about sibling as well. What's the film that scared you the most? Do you like being scared, Zeynep Johnson?
No, thank you. No, I do not like being scared at all.
Right.
I think the first like scary movie I saw was like Freddy Krueger, like Friday the 13th. And I hated it because I always, all my life, I've dreamt in color. And right. I'm like, this is exactly where a scary monster could get me. Was in my dream. So like I grew up in New York, right? In New York, you live in skyscrapers and stuff. So like the Jason, all the scary movies where you go through the woods, I'm like, that'll never happen. I live in New York. Like, you know, the scenario doesn't present itself for a killer. But with Friday the 13th,
killers can't walk up so many stairs. There's too many stairs for them. Jason will get tired.
So then with Freddy Krueger, I was like, oh my God, all you have to do is go to sleep. I was like, this isn't good. So that scared me. But then, you know, like, sure. I mean, after like, I don't know, like 5 or 6 films, then they did Jason Takes Manhattan. And I was like, oh no.
They did. He did take Manhattan. I don't even know how he did it. He learned to walk upstairs faster, maybe.
Oh, I didn't even see it. So I'll never know.
Yeah.
But I know as a kid, I used to be scared. It's not the film that scared me the most. I'll get to that. But the film that I used to be afraid of was Wizard of Oz.
It's a scary film.
I used to be afraid of the witch with the green face. That's it. Like I would even have dreams that a witch would show up.
Yeesh.
And then somehow pretend to be my mother. And in the dream, I had to choose between the witch and my mother, and I better make the right choice.
Jesus.
That's crazy, right?
Yeah, that is really scary. Did you make the right choice?
I made the right choice. And you know what? I think I made the right choice most times. Or I would wake up before it was even revealed, you know? And maybe, I don't know, maybe that's like some really deep-rooted something about my feelings about my mom. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But one summer, I did like an intensive at RADA. And so I spent the summer in London.
Oh,
and
wow.
I saw Wicked.
Oh, Wicked. Yeah.
I saw Wicked in London and I was so moved. I never was afraid of witches again.
Wow.
Yeah. I was like, intermission, did not want to get up out my seat. I was like, I'm ready for the second half. Let's go. But I think it's because it told me like a story about the witch that I didn't. It's like, oh no, she's not a witch at all. Yeah.
Witch or Mother is a great game show for us to pitch to CBS.
Witch or to CBS? You think CBS would buy that?
Yeah. Witch or Mother is pretty good. I see the poster's very easy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I really like it.
What's the prize?
Well, the prize is you live, I guess. If you pick your mother, you get to go home. If you pick the witch, you have to stay in stay of the week at CBS.
At like CBS Studios?
Yeah, at CBS in Radford. You just get put in one of the offices there for a week. We'll do like a sort of magazine show about you. Anyway, what's the film that most people don't like? It's not critically acclaimed, but you love it. You don't care what any of these idiots say about that film.
Waterboy.
Oh, yeah. Great, great show.
Waterboy is such a good film.
Yeah, it is.
He couldn't make that film now. Just with like PC culture and stuff, like he could never make that. He's like, you have to ask yourself, like, is he handy? You know, like what, like you cannot make that film today.
Yeah.
But I loved it. I loved Waterboy.
Yeah. Funny. He's funny. I love Adam Sandler. I got no beef with him.
Yeah. He was like, medulla oblongata. Like, it's just, it's too funny. That movie is too funny. I'm the water boy. What? Come on. Sorry. I'm sorry.
What is the film that alternatively you used to love, you loved it, but you've watched it recently and you do not like it anymore for whatever reason that may be?
Okay. So I don't dislike it, but I don't think it ages well. Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Why do you believe that it's not aged well?
A few things.
Shoot.
Ferris Bueller was quite an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just don't think that, like, the hero nowadays is not the asshole, you know?
Yeah.
It took place in, like, Chicago, and there was, like, not a Black person in sight. It's like this freaking teenage kid just got on a float in the middle of a parade in Chicago and was, like, you know? Like, I just, yeah. like, it just... When I watch it now, I have to suspend my disbelief so far to really appreciate the story being told, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But when I was a kid, I loved it. I wanted to be Ferris Bueller. I hated his sister. Yeah. Mm. The only thing that ages well in Ferris Bueller is the girlfriend. She had on this white fringe leather jacket. And I'm like, where is that jacket? That jacket would look amazing today.
Mia Sara. Is it Mia Sara or Mia Sara's jacket? We must get
it. Is
that
her name?
Christmas.
Is that the actress's name? Oh my God, I would love it. I would absolutely love it.
Yeah. Well, let's make a night, shall we? I'm going to tell Daniel what to get you for Christmas. What is the film that means the most to you? Not necessarily the film itself is any good, but because the experience you had around seeing the film will always make it special to you, Zainab Johnson.
Okay. I have to change your question a little bit to answer this. The film isn't special to me, but I have never had this experience seeing a film before.
Okay.
So, you know, I said I was raised Muslim, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know much about the church, but there was a time where a movie called The Passion of the Christ came out.
Yes, I've seen it.
And I just kept hearing, like, that's all that was in a news cycle. That's what everyone talked about, you know, and this is like a bit before social media, but it still had the same, like if something could have trended before social media.
It's one of the biggest films of all time. It's one of the biggest films of all time.
And like none of my friends were, I was young, you know, like none of my friends were talking about it. No, but I remember feeling like, wow, people, there's these like, there's nobody in the middle. I didn't hear anybody with Passion of the Christ go, like, I didn't hear that, you know, like I could take it or leave it.
It's fine.
It was like really opposite ends of the spectrum, like amazing or they freaking hated it, right? Mm-hmm. Like blasphemous. And I was like, I got to see this film. And I went by myself to the movie theater and I sat there and I watched that film. And I probably after the first 10 minutes, I cried for 2 hours.
Wow.
I cried for 2 hours. And I'm talking about like it was painful. to cry, right? And it wasn't like, it wasn't like, oh, you know, it was like really like I felt like I was watching the equivalent. This is going to sound super crazy right now, but forgive me. I felt like I was watching what somebody today might describe as like George Floyd, their George Floyd experience.
Oh, wow.
Do you get what I'm saying? Like, for me, it was just about like to watch somebody be like, forget the religious story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Forget that they're saying that's Jesus. I sat and watched like a human being be tortured for 2 hours.
Yeah.
And I just cried. I couldn't believe it. And so that's not the reason why it stays with me though. When I got up to leave after the film was over, you can see I'm visibly like swollen and distressed. And I'm also like this teenager, you know, also like this young teenager. And this at the movies by herself that just finished watching this movie. And this woman comes up to me and she grabs my hand and she says, "Are you okay?" And I was like trying to like get my words. And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm okay. I'll be okay." And then she said to me, "See why it's important to make Jesus your Lord and Savior." Like she tried to convert me in that moment. And it pissed me off. I went from one emotion to another. And then I was so pissed. I was so upset that she made it about the religion. I was so upset that she made it about this thing that, you know, this thing that everybody is fighting for control over. And that she did it, that it wasn't just about like a human being was just tortured right in front of us for 2 hours. And I said that to her. I was like, "What?" Like I grabbed my hand away from her. And I was like, "What?" I was like, no, this isn't about Christianity at all or Jesus. I was like, I just watched a man tortured for 2 hours. That was hard.
And what'd she say?
She just looked at me like, "How dare I?" She would, I'm sure she wouldn't have told this story much different. Like, you know, there was a girl who didn't care that it was Jesus, you know?
Wow. Like, do you think she was just waiting outside the screen and trying to convert people after every showing?
If she was doing that and they didn't kick her out the movie theater, then I'm going to have to write AMC a letter.
Yeah, that's really interesting what you say about the film. I mean, that film is kind of insane. It is just 2 hours of a man being tortured.
Tortured.
And it's brutal and I don't really like it at all. It's horrible. It's really, really, really horrible. And you're like, what is this?
Yeah.
Are we watching?
Yeah.
Great answer.
I have a happier moment though. Oh, okay. We can keep that one. when I saw Shrek, the first Shrek.
Oh yeah.
I'll never forget my friend. She was like babysitting her niece that day. And she's like, "Come with me to the movie theater." And I'm like, "To see what?" And she's like, "Oh, I gotta take my niece to the movies to see Shrek." And I'm like, "A kid? I'm not going to the movies." Like again, I'm like a cool teenager.
Yeah.
So I'm like, no, I don't want to do that. It was one of the best experiences. I mean, I was laughing so hard. It made me realize that these like animated films, for the most part, they're not like for kids. Like the visual aspect of it are for kids, but the dialogue, the story, they're not for kids at all. Like I was laughing so hard. I looked over at my friend's niece who at the time was like 4 or 5 years old. And she was just like, "You keep That's laughing really at nice. This donkey. What's funny?" And I'm like,
"Donkey." You don't even know how funny this donkey is.
Exactly.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Stadtsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. you'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
What is the film you most relate to, Zainab Johnson?
I don't know if I relate to a film. Is that bad?
It's very interesting you say that. I find this is the question people struggle with the most. It depends. I mean, it's the reason it would surprise me you saying that is because you've been so affected by so many things in the films you've talked about. You know, you're obviously very empathetic and sensitive, and you take these things on, even though it's just a film. You could argue it's just a film, but you're devastated by things you've seen or whatever, but that you don't think that you've connected with any of them in a way like that relates to you is interesting.
Like, I don't know if I've ever watched anything, a film, and saw myself. I have watched things and like wondered like what that's like, you know, but yeah. I honestly don't think that I've seen a story or a character portrayed on film. And I mean, look, maybe this is just like an enlightening moment for me that I have some work to do in creating, you know, because I don't feel like I see myself somebody that I relate to on camera very often.
Then, yeah, I would take this as really exciting news because that means you got to fucking make something.
Yeah.
This is very cool. At least you know whatever you're going to make hasn't been done.
Yeah. Oh my God. I'm trying to. And there's like films that I love. Like I loved Thelma and Louise. I loved Annie. I loved so many films, but I never see myself. I'm even thinking about films with like all women. Like I'm thinking about like Color Purple, Women of Brewster, like women of, you know, like black women.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I watch it and I'm like, dang, I wonder what that was like, but I don't see myself at all.
Very interesting. Yeah. What's the sexiest film you've ever seen, Zainab Johnson?
Sexiest film I've ever seen is called Takers. Are you familiar with Takers?
Takers.
I call Takers the fine boy movie because it has every fine boy in the movie. It has Idris Elba. It has Michael Ealy. It has Hayden Christensen.
Fine.
It has Chris Brown. It's like every fine man of that year.
Wait. Chris Brown, carry on.
Chris Brown is debatable for some, but I'm a huge Chris Brown crusher. So
something I've got to warn Daniel about, but okay.
But it had like, it just had like a body of like fine men.
Right.
And then they had to like, you know, I don't know. It was like a scheme or something. I don't really remember the plot. I just remember.
And fuck knows what they were trying to take. They were trying to take something or something. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, they were takers. Yeah. But they weren't
what they were really taking was my fucking heart.
my libido. Ooh.
Yeah. I didn't know the word for it.
but it's like, it's not like Magic Mike. It's not like men being strippers. It's like sexy in a different way, you know?
Just men taking shit. They're just taking shit. They're fine and they're taking shit.
That's so funny. That's a pitch.
It's a good tagline.
They're just fine and they're taking shit.
They're fine and they're taking shit. There's a subcategory to this question, Zainab Johnson.
Okay.
The subcategory is troubling boners, worrying wide-ons. A film you found arousing that you weren't sure you should.
I mean, I could say, and this is totally not this category, but I am aroused by stuff like this. I could say like a film like The Notebook, you know, because I just think a man's like undying love for a woman is just super, super aroused.
I think it's interesting you find that a worrying wide on. That sounds like a nice, healthy wide on.
It's like, ooh, that's the porn I want to see. He just, no private parts. He built a house. Ooh, that gets me going.
Look at him being really respectful and sticking around forever.
Look at him. He's running to her in the rain. Oh, that's the spot.
Well, I mean, yeah.
There is this scene, though, in Set It Off, which is not like a film that you should ever be aroused by.
I love Set It Off.
Well, I could see that. It's just like four women, you know, like four badass women.
Yeah, that film could be called Female Takers.
Yeah, that exactly. That's the Female Takers. But there's a scene where Jada Pinkett's character, she has sex with Blair Underwood. Mm-hmm. And it's so like sensual at first. And then it's just like this perfectly angled view of like what is supposed to be Jada Pinkett's ass. And two things happen to me whenever I see it. One, I'm like, ooh. And then two, I'm like, I wonder if that's a body double. And then that's it.
You know who is the body double? I'm going to spoil it for you. It's Julia Roberts' best friend. She did very well as Jada Pinkett Smith's ass double.
That would be amazing. And also, she only had one job ever in life, and that sucks.
Yeah. Well, she's all right. Don't worry about it. She's fine. What is objectively the greatest film ever made? Might not be your favorite, but it's objectively the greatest.
Actually tried to convince an audience of this the other day, and they were not on board with it. Forrest Gump.
Wow. Okay.
What was that reaction?
It's interesting. If you, I'm going to have to make you listen to an old episode of the podcast that I had with Dane Baptiste, where he gives a very, very, very convincing argument that Forrest Gump is a film. Well, let me hear your, I'm going to leave it with you. Tell me your theory on why it's the greatest.
There's so much happening. Mm-hmm. And Forrest Gump is, again, a film that they could not make today.
Yep.
If you walked in a room today, we talk about like a Jenna. I don't know what love is, Jenna. They would be like, they would run you out of town.
Yep.
With a hashtag cancellation notice.
Yeah.
Forrest Gump was somebody that, like, okay, here's the reason why it's the greatest movie. Because it took one man, it took one kind of like, I'm just going to call him an autistic savant. I don't know what he was, right?
Yeah.
But he managed to be the most unlikely person in every greatest moment in history. Mm-hmm. And because they did that, and it was effortlessly laced with like a love story. A man's undying love for this woman.
Worrying, why don't I?
Yeah, it was laced with these unlikely friendships that just, you know, that developed. And then because you travel through decades with this person, through this person's life, you get to experience via film some of the greatest moments that you weren't around to see, some of the greatest music that you weren't around to experience. You know what I'm saying? You get to live through time. Forrest Gump is like, it's like a happy-go-lucky history lesson that everybody needs of America. Is it really America? No, but it is the idealistic version. Like, who else to tell it? Forrest is not like a straight white guy. We hate straight white men right now. Forrest is like a level above special needs, and that's the straight white guy we can always get behind. Life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. That's the greatest film.
Yeah. Forrest, have you ever seen a box of chocolates? They do tell you what's in them on all boxes of chocolates. Just turn it over and you'll see what you're going to get on the inside.
But that is so true. But have you ever eaten a box of chocolates and you know exactly what it says, but you still bite it and look inside as if you don't know what it actually says?
You're absolutely right. Forrest Gump is the greatest film ever made. You're absolutely right. You've done it. What's the film you could or have watched the most over and over again?
Coming to America.
Correct. What's the film? No, we don't like to be negative, Zainab.
Okay.
So we'll do it fairly quick. What's the worst film you've ever seen?
Human Centipede.
Fair enough.
And I saw it while in London. I know it takes place in like Germany or something like that, but I tend to, the entire European, you know? And I was just like, oh my God, somebody put me on a flight immediately. These people are crazy. I don't even want my passport stamped. Get me out of here.
Did you see it in the cinema?
No.
Okay. Did friends make you watch it?
I watched it on my own. Wow. Because I saw, like, I think I may be watching my sister's husband is British. And so they lived there for a while. And I think that maybe I was just up late one day. I probably watched it with my sister and her husband. But I think I suggested it. And I was like, it's like a, I'm like, this can't be, like, you know how you have to watch. And then it's so grotesque. It's so, you know, but you also can't look away because you have to see how it. You need to be redeemed. That's not a film that you just stop watching.
Yeah.
You need for somebody to get away or for some, you know, like you, it, but terrible. At the end, I was like, how? No,
thank you.
No, Europe. We have to change this.
No, thank you. I'm leaving Europe now. Thank you. What is the, you're in comedy. You're very funny. What's the film that made you laugh the most, Zainab Johnson?
Probably 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Funny film. Funny film.
And my favorite part, the funniest part, I believe, is an improvised scene.
Tell me the part.
It is between Kevin Hart and Romani Malco. I hope I'm saying his name right. But Kevin comes in, Kevin's character, and this is like before the world loves Kevin. But this is like, I don't think Kevin has done any better. Like he's good, sure. But it's like, I'm like, that was like pure freaking comedy. You know, he comes in and he wants a discount and he feels like Romani's character should give him a discount just because he's Black. Right. And so he's like, this is not how that works. Like, you know, you and he's like, get your man. Like, they just go back and forth. And I can't really say it because it involves the N word.
Right.
But at some point he's like, no, you wanted the N word. You got the N word. No, you got to, like, it was just, it's so, I can watch that scene over and over and over. And I think it's because at some point you see that Kevin wants the break. Like, you that it's, you know, when you watch comedians and they're one upping each other in the scene.
Yeah.
And it's like, and one of them is like, I don't know. It's like, who's going to win the battle of this improv, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what that movie is so hysterical to me. But that scene is hilarious.
Love it. Love it. Zainab Johnson, you have been one of the greatest. I've loved this. I've loved every aspect of this. However, when you were 93 years old, 3 times 3 times 3 times 3, 303, made 9 with a 3, 4 threes. Magic number.
Okay.
You were 93.
Okay.
You were in your all-white linen bedroom. All-white linen everywhere.
Okay.
Not on the ceiling, let's be real. Just on your furniture. And you were laying in your bed. And you were told this was the day. This was the day you were going to die. You were very healthy. But you said, today's the day you didn't die. And you were with Daniel. Lovely, lovely, lovely Daniel. Like a young Colin Firth. There he was, Daniel. And he said, my darling, my angel, I've loved you all my life. And he said, I'm going to do my favorite thing. I'm going to cry telling this. And he said, I'm going to do your favorite thing. And he rubbed your feet. And you said, I love you, Daniel. Thank you for being goofy for all these years. And he said, I just liked making you laugh. And you closed your eyes and you peacefully went to a curated heaven where you saw all your favorites. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm walking by with a coffin, you know what I'm like. And I'm like, I wonder where Zainab is. And I'm like, oh no, I know what day of the week it is. And I go upstairs, Daniel, he's on his knees at the bed. I go, you okay, Daniel? And we hug. Because that's what Daniel's like. He's a really good hugger as well. A big old hug. And he leaves the room. And I say, don't worry, I'll take care of this. And I pop you in the coffin. But the coffin I got for you was was a bit small. Because you had a narrow corridor. So I knew your stairway was narrow. I was like, getting up the stairs is going to be difficult. Anyway, I really have to stuff you in the coffin, but because you've had the nicest death we've ever had, this actually goes quite well. Just get you in the coffin. But there's really not enough room in this coffin for anything else. There's only enough room to put a DVD, slip it in the side, for you to take across to the other side. And on the other side, it's movie night every night. One night, it's your movie night. What film are you taking to show everyone in heaven when it's your movie night, Zainab Johnson?
I'm so sorry to give the same answer again, Coming to America.
It's Coming to America.
You know what it is? I've watched Coming to America so many times. I can recite this movie to you without, I don't even need the film playing. Mm-hmm. And still, after 100 plus views, I enjoy it the same and I discover something different.
You know what else is one of the rare films from 20 years ago? What is it? 20 years ago?
Yeah. 30 at this point.
Yeah. That has rare comedy films that has dated very well. Like it isn't, it's surprisingly kind of progressive and, you know what I mean? Like so many films of that era, you watch them now and you're like, oh God. Whereas Coming to America is still holds up in every aspect.
When I agree with you, and I realized that I started watching Seinfeld for the first time. Mm. And I was like, this is interesting. These jokes don't really age well. Yeah, like they, yeah. It's like irrelevant what he's talking about, right? In my opinion. But when I first decided that I was going to do comedy, I went to open mics. And then someone told me to try this class, this comedy class. And the woman who was teaching this comedy class told me, get up on stage and do your favorite joke. And I was like, my favorite joke? And she was like, yeah, do a joke. You want to be a comedian? Tell me your favorite joke, right? And I got up on stage and I did this exactly, Brett. I said, hold up, hold up, hold up. A man goes to a restaurant. He orders a bowl of soup. The waiter brings him a bowl of soup. The man says, take this soup back. And the waiter says, what is the soup too hot? The man says, take the soup back. He's like, what is the soup too cold? And he's like, would you just taste the soup? And he's like, where's the spoon? Uh-huh. Whatever that joke is, that joke at the end of Coming to America, I told that joke. I told that joke. I didn't tell it verbatim now, but I told that joke verbatim. And everybody watching was like, and I was like, you told me to tell my favorite joke. And at the time, it's like, I didn't really know jokes verbatim, yeah. You know, like I didn't really know people's. And that was the joke that I remembered.
That's fucking great. And here you are. Now, Zainab.
So there's taste the soup, taste the soup.
This has been wonderful.
Sorry.
Is there anything you would like to tell people to look out for, to listen to watch?
Yeah, they can watch the second season of Upload when it premieres in January 2020, which is on Amazon.
Nice.
I just watched the full second season. Ooh.
Oh, is it good? You happy?
I am happy. I think that if anybody liked the first season, then the second season is just going to be like, music, you know, it's just gonna double down on the things that you love. They can of course listen to my podcast. It's called Honest Tea with Z, H-O-N-E-S-T-E-A with Z. It's available wherever you get podcasts. And if you guys want to check out my social media, it's Zainab Johnson on everything. And yeah, I do shows and stuff.
Go and see her do stand up. Go and see her stand up. Yes. It's really fucking good. Right. Yeah. Zainab. This has been an absolute joy, and I'm so excited for you to meet Daniel, and thank you very much. Have a wonderful
thank you.
Death. Thank you. And goodbye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So that was episode 170. Head over to patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 20 minutes of chat, secrets and video with Zainab. Go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating and write about the film that means the most to you and why. It's a very nice thing to read, helps numbers, Maureen loves it, etc. Thank you very much. Thank you to Zainab for doing the show. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Latham for the photography. Thank you all for listening. Come and join me next week, where my guest, I will not tell you until you hear next week's episode. You are going to love it. So that is all. I hope you're all well. That is it for now. In the meantime, Have a lovely week. And please, now more than ever, be excellent to each other.
Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind. Sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.